Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm just like sitting here like
So we're back with part two
of
the Black Dahlia episode. I didn't realize whenever we started recording that it was going to turn into two parts, but it is a really long one because again, this is a huge case and
doing a deep dive
forever ago. For me, it had been so long since, because it's one of those cases I've known for years and years and years
that you just hadn't covered.
Like, yeah. So I haven't really read about it in a while.
Yeah. Same.
And so it was interesting to read through things, especially to see, because I was like, was it this true? Mm-hmm. It turns out that it wasn't. One of the other rumors about her, by the way, this is the Witch's Magic.
Oh, hey guys.
Witch's Magic Murder Mystery Podcast.
I'm Kara.
Megan.
Hey.
If you haven't listened to part one,
jump back and go over it.
That was the one right before this. You should go listen to that first. This won't make sense to you if you haven't. But one of the other rumors I remembered hearing and just assuming was true was there had been speculation that there was something wrong with her physically.
Yes.
Like genetically. Yeah, yeah. And I can't remember, like, she didn't have the appropriate sexual organs or she had those or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember, but yeah.
And that's not true. That wasn't noted in the autopsy report either. I don't even know why that, like, I think the theory was that she had been picked up and then when he discovered that she couldn't have sex because she didn't have the right equipment, then he killed her. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember hearing that too.
It's strange. I mean, the speculation about this poor woman, young girl, you know, she was 22 years old. Okay, so in the last episode, we went through Elizabeth's history and her life up until she was found dead, along with an overview of the investigation and the suspects. Mm-hmm. So today, I'm going to start with some possibly related murders.
Okay.
And this, I think, is really interesting.
Yeah.
So there are several crime authors, as well as police detective Peter Murillo. They have suspected a link between Elizabeth Short's murder and the Cleveland Torso murders.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, makes sense because of the way the bodies were dissected.
Yeah.
Those obviously took place in Cleveland between 1934 and 1938. The original LAPD investigators studied the torso murders in 1947 as part of their investigation into Elizabeth's death, but later discounted any connection between the two cases. In 1980, new evidence implicating a former torso murder suspect, Jack Anderson Wilson, a.k.a. Arnold Smith, I don't know, was investigated by Detective St. John in relation to Short's murder. He claimed he was close to arresting Wilson in Short's murder, but that Wilson died in a fire on February 4th, 1982. I don't know. I just think that's like, you were close to arresting him in Short's murder? Why? Like, what did you find? But there's nothing I can find.
That's wild.
There's also some speculation that her death is connected to the lipstick murders, which happened in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
One of those was the 1946 murder and dismemberment of 6-year-old Suzanne Degnan in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Captain Donahoe of LAPD stated publicly that he believed that the Black Dahlia and the lipstick murders were likely connected. Among the evidence cited is the fact that this is, to me, dumb, that Short's body was found on Norton Avenue, three blocks west,
okay,
of Degnan Boulevard. And Degnan was the last name of 6-year-old Suzanne Degnan from Chicago, who was murdered. And I'm just like, it feels like a stretch, guys.
We're reaching here.
I get that we're desperate, but come on. There were also striking similarities between the handwriting on the Degnan ransom note and that of the Black Dahlia Avenger, that one handwritten note.
Mm-hmm.
Both texts use a combination of capitals and small letters. And both notes contained a similar misshapen letter P, and they have one word that matches exactly. My one thought about that is, I don't personally believe that handwritten letter to whichever newspaper that was, was really a thing. Like, I don't believe that it had anything to do with the Black Dahlia.
Yeah.
So it could be that the letter was written by the same person and still not connected to the case. It was just like a red herring. It could also be that because I have so little faith in what the journalists were doing at the time, maybe they knew, because this happened, the Chicago cases happened before the Black Dahlia murder. Mm-hmm. So maybe they had seen it and they copied the style.
Yeah.
Because it was such a famous case.
Yeah.
That's all my opinion. Based in nothing but my brain. Convicted serial killer William Herons. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I pronounced that right.
Yeah, but it looks
fine. He served life in prison for Degnan's murder.
Okay.
He was initially arrested at age 17 for breaking into a residence close to that of Degnan. He claimed that he was tortured by police, forced to confess, and made a scapegoat for the murder. So the idea here is that, like, it couldn't have been him because he was in prison at the time.
Right.
But they're also like, but maybe he didn't really do it.
Right.
After being taken from the medical infirmary at the Dixon Correctional Center on February 26, 2012, he died at the University of Illinois Medical Center on March 5th, 2012, at the age of 83.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the part where, you know, I mentioned in the last episode that there had been some criticisms up to the LAPD about how they had, there was a whole bunch of murders that weren't getting solved.
Yeah.
Between 1943 and 1949, within Los Angeles, over a dozen unsolved murders occurred, including Elizabeth. And all of these included the sexual mutilation of young, attractive women.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, detectives thought that all of the murders could be the work of one serial killer.
Okay.
When we read through this, it is pretty wild. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to run through these, and collectively, they're called the lone woman murders because each time the woman was found alone.
Right.
Obviously, or was alone when she was taken.
Yeah.
A lot of the details in these cases, I don't get very graphic, but it's just upsetting, I guess.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So,
I don't know.
It's a lot.
This whole case is a lot. Again, if you remember it, if you've looked at the crime scene photos, it's a lot. So, you know, take care of yourself. Don't listen if it's going to upset you. I love you. Okay. On July 27th, 1943. So this is before Elizabeth was murdered.
Right.
The son of a Los Angeles County golf course greenskeeper discovered the nude body of 41-year-old Aura Elizabeth Murray lying on the ground near the parking lot of the Fox Hills golf course. She had been severely beaten about her face and body, and the autopsy determined that her cause of death was due to constriction of the larynx by strangulation. She had last been seen attending a dance at the Zenda Ballroom in downtown Los Angeles with her sister on July 26, 1943, so just the day before, before leaving with an unidentified man. Her murder remains unsolved, just like all of these.
Oh my gosh, about.
John Gilmore's 1994 book, Severed, The True Story of the Black Dahlia Murder, suggests that Elizabeth's death could be connected to the murder of 20-year-old Georgette Elise Bardorf.
Mm-hmm.
Bardorf.
Mm-hmm.
She was discovered dead in the bathtub of her apartment on the morning of October 12, 1944.
My gosh.
It's believed that Georgette was attacked by a man who was waiting inside the apartment for her.
Ooh.
The reason that the author thinks these are connected is because Georgette was a hostess at the Hollywood Canteen at the time, and there are some reports that Elizabeth had actually worked there too.
Oh.
Also, in Georgette's case, the killer sent letters to the newspaper taunting police.
Mm.
I also think that might have just been something that happened. You know,
it seems like it was a thing.
Whether that's a real thing that happened or something that newspapers
wanted to make a thing. Yeah.
So the next one would have been Elizabeth's death in January of 1947. And then on February 10th, 1947, so about a month after Elizabeth Short was killed, 44-year-old Jeannie Nettie French was murdered in Los Angeles. Her body was discovered on Grandview Boulevard, nude and badly beaten. There was a message written on her stomach and lipstick that included the letters BD, which newspapers said probably stood for the Black Dahlia. But there is some speculation that the initials were actually PD and probably stood for police department. There was a whole message, not just the letters.
Right. Yeah.
On March 12, 1947, the nude body of 43-year-old Evelyn Winters was found just after midnight in a vacant lot of an abandoned rail yard in Norwalk, California, which is along the Los Angeles River. She had been bludgeoned and strangled to death. Evelyn was last seen by a guy named James Joseph Tiernan, who said that he had seen her leave the Albany Hotel in Los Angeles at about 8 o'clock the night before. Dorothy Ella Montgomery, 36, was found nude and beaten at around 10:30 in the morning in a vacant field on May 4th, 1947, in Florence, Graham, California. She had died from strangulation. She had been missing since 9:30 the night before, after she had gone to pick up her daughter at a dance recital. A week after that, an oil company patrolman found the body of 39-year-old Laura Eliza Trelstad in an oil field on Long Beach Boulevard. She had been sexually assaulted before death and thrown from a moving vehicle.
Oh my gosh.
Examination of her body showed that Laura had been bludgeoned on the head and strangled with a belt. So I think the fact there's so many of these that they were bludgeoned and strangled and also just left out in the open, just like Elizabeth. But there was no talk of Elizabeth being strangled.
Right.
They do think she was bludgeoned.
Yeah.
But not strangled. So whether or not Elizabeth is part of these, it does seem like
there's a lot of similarities.
So many.
Yeah.
On July 8th, 1947, the naked body of 21-year-old Rosinda Josephine Mondragon was discovered in a gutter near the Los Angeles City Hall. She had been strangled by a silk stocking. Now, in her case, the last known sighting of her was when she was serving her ex-husband with divorce papers. And then she disappeared, which makes it a little questionable.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah,
it could just be a coincidence.
Yeah.
On the evening of October 2nd, 1947, Lillian Dominguez, 15. Okay, this one I think does not seem connected to me at all, but they put it in the list anyway. So I am too. She was walking home with her sister and her friend in Santa Monica when a man approached them and proceeded to stab Dominguez in the heart with a long and thin stiletto blade between her second and third ribs.
Oh my gosh.
She's 15. Like nothing about this. The age, the way she was killed, the fact that she wasn't alone. None of this
just
matches with the others.
Some crazy person runs up and stabs her.
And I think the reason it's thrown in is because of this. A week later, a note on the back of a business card was left under the door of a furniture store. And it said, "I killed the Santa Monica girl and I will kill others."
Oh.
Right. Just some serious disturbance in California.
Yeah.
On February 14th, 1948, 42-year-old Gladys Eugenia Kern, who was a Los Angeles real estate agent, was found stabbed in the back with a hunting knife in a vacant house that she was showing in Los Feliz.
Sure.
Los Feliz. The murderer had stolen her appointment book during the crime and had cleaned the murder weapon before he left.
I remember hearing about that.
But again, stabbed. I know it's not impossible for a murderer to change their mode of killing. I mean, Israel Keyes did that.
Yeah.
But it's just unusual.
Yeah.
Not impossible, but unlikely.
Right.
Cosmetologist Louise Margaret Springer was 35 when she was found murdered on June 13, 1949, in the backseat of her husband's convertible sedan alongside a street in the south central part of LA. She had been garroted. Is that how you say that? It's one of those things where I'd never thought I was pronouncing it wrong until I just now said it on the podcast. With a length of clothesline that had been knotted and a stick had also been inserted inside her. Her husband notified law enforcement of her disappearance that evening when he came home to find both Springer and his vehicle missing from the parking lot where they had been parked. You know, I always get a little bit like,
did you?
But there are plenty of men who don't kill their wives.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I would probably say there's more men that don't kill their wives than do.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
but we have a true crime podcast.
Right. So, my sample size is skewed.
Yes.
Okay, so those are all of the like the lone woman murders that they think like could all be connected. And it could be that Elizabeth Short is one of those.
Right.
While they were all, or I shouldn't say all, while the majority of those were bludgeoned and a lot of them had some like sexual stuff done to them, nobody else was dissected the way that she
was.
And that's such a drastic thing to do.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Kara.
Megan.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained?
It's blinking.
It's got blinking. The engine light on.
Megan.
Kara.
I have a coffee shop and I am so used to, like, you know, I can sit and talk to you forever and we can talk about anything and everything, but I also am very much an empath and absorb everybody's emotions. So having to like cover for a barista, but also having like 10 plus employees all with different personalities and them constantly coming at you with all of their feelings and all of the things that they've got going on. And you personally have things going on top of it. You're just like, oh,
yeah,
I know I'm exhausted. How do I like balance this back out?
Right.
Right.
To balance it out so that you can have like an appropriate amount of social battery for when you need it.
Yeah, exactly.
But also take care of
just like a little refresher. Yeah.
So it could be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin.
Oh, for sure.
But therapy is such a good way to help you like figure out ways that you can, like you said, balance it out and some like strategies and be able to even recognize like what you were saying about like being an empath, just having someone who can kind of point things out to right. you that you don't always notice right, yourself exactly. because we've always been the way that we uh-huh. are. So you forget that maybe there's more behind yeah, it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
All you have to do is fill out a little questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time. If you're not set on one and you're just like, I'm just not getting the responses that I need, or I just am not like benefiting from this as much as I thought I would, switch it up. Nobody's going to be offended. They just didn't fit your yeah. personality.
And it's really important to have a therapist yeah, that you exactly. want to talk to. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/WMMM today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WMMM.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I do think it's interesting that they were all
time
just
consuming,
left outside.
Like draining the blood from her body.
Right.
And cleaning her the way that, yeah.
None of these seem to have any connection to a hotel, aside from the one girl who was last seen like leaving a hotel.
Right.
And again, we don't know that what happened at the Astor Motel, which was something we discussed in the last episode.
If it had
episode,
anything to do with her or not.
It may not have, but it also may have.
Right. You know,
we don't know where she was killed.
We're not going to know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this all leads me to the suspect that I think did it.
Mm-hmm.
Although he was formally charged.
Neverly.
Although he was never formally charged in the crime, a man named George Hodel
mm-hmm.
came to wider attention after his death, when he was accused by his son, LAPD homicide detective Steve Hodel, of killing Elizabeth Short and also committing several other murders.
Oh.
So George Hodel was a Los Angeles physician, and he was also an LA native. He'd always lived there.
Yeah.
So there's number one, the fact that he has this medical background.
Right.
He was super smart like us.
Yeah.
And he graduated high school in 1920.
He had no problems with words.
No. Real good at math.
So
yeah, he could pronounce everything correctly.
Yeah.
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 I don't want to give him any more compliments. No. He's a monster, a human.
Idiot. Yeah.
He graduated high school when he was 15.
Wow.
And enrolled at the California Institute of Technology at 16, Kara.
My gosh.
He was expelled because at 16, he was having an affair with his professor's wife and had gotten her pregnant. Bold. He received his medical degree. Kara just shuddered and it made me giggle. He received his medical degree in 1936.
Jeez.
In 1940. So he's already married to one woman uh-huh. named Dorothy.
Mm-hmm.
In 1940, he got married to another woman named Dorothy, who was the ex-wife of a close friend. Now.
Oh, okay.
He gave her a nickname, Durero, uh-huh. so that his inner circle would not confuse the two Dorothys. Another way that you could not have to worry about your two wives
is you don't have two.
It's just to have
wives.
One. Yeah.
Yeah. Or none at all.
Yeah. If you don't want to be married, don't.
Yeah.
Don't be.
Give them nicknames.
Hodel was well known to have casual flings with others, and he was into sadomasochism like many of his friends. As we say all the time, do whatever you want. If it's consenting adults here, do whatever
you do. You.
I don't care. But it is something to point out that he had some possibly violent tendencies.
Right.
And it's possible that something went too far.
Mm-hmm.
George Hodel's polygamy pretty much flew under the radar. Like, nobody cared. Everybody knew.
Yeah.
Nobody cared.
We were just like, sure.
And it doesn't seem like it had any bearing on him being a suspect in the murder of Elizabeth Short.
But she knew 50 men.
Yeah.
How dare she?
Mm-hmm. Now, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
He has two. However, in 1949, George Hodel was publicly accused by his daughter of sexually abusing her.
Oh.
She claimed that he had forced himself on her and made her read erotica because he wanted her to be a sexual goddess. So she would have to read erotica so she could study. It was like homework, right?
Oh, God.
Hodel, widely known for his over-the-top, highly sexual parties, was charged with incestuous sexual abuse against her.
Okay.
Two witnesses testified against George Hodel and told the jury that they had seen him with their eyes force himself on his daughter. The prosecution had a third witness, but she recanted her story and refused to take the stand. Maybe, who knows why? Possibly out of fear.
Right. It's terrifying, I'm sure.
Now, his defense team, they had a smear campaign against his daughter. They claimed that she was attention-seeking. She's a liar. They had all these accusations, and the jury believed it.
Oh, my God.
The charges were dismissed.
That's disgusting.
I just can't stand it. I understand that there are people who will falsely accuse others of all sorts of horrible things.
Right, exactly.
And that it is important to be aware of that, right? But there were eyewitnesses.
Right, three of them.
Well, two that testified. Two,
right, yeah.
And it's just, it's just awful.
Yeah.
Several witnesses told police that they had seen George Hodel and Elizabeth Short together, as reportedly she was one of many flings that he spent time with.
Yeah.
There was enough evidence, apparently. So here's what I should say. While his name came into the spotlight after his death, he had been a suspect on the LAPD's list at the time of the murders.
Okay.
And there was enough evidence at the time that in 1950, they bugged his home to try and
see if get more evidence. Yeah.
Through the tapes from hours of recordings, police caught Hodel saying, "Supposing I did kill the Black Dahlia. They can't prove it now. They can't talk to my secretary anymore because she's dead," which is another murder that he was suspected of. They thought there was something fishy. Anyway, now they may have figured it out. Killed her. Maybe I did kill my secretary. Who are you having this conversation with?
Who are you talking to, sir?
Who's there with you? Or is he just pacing around his house?
Right, saying talking to himself. Stuff? Yeah.
So he was among the top five suspects.
Well, again, of course he was.
Like I said, Neverly. I said it again. He was among the top five suspects, but never formally charged. Okay, let's try it one more time. Are you ready?
Sure.
I'm ready?
I feel like you've got this.
Okay. Thank you. Though he was among the top five suspects, Hodel was never formally charged with the murder of Elizabeth Short. After moving to Hawaii and starting another family, he became a psychiatrist and eventually he's in charge of people's mental well-being.
Wow.
And he eventually moved to the Philippines before returning to San Francisco, where he died in 1999.
And there's not a trail of bodies that followed him?
Apparently not. After George Hodel's death, his son, like I said, Steve Hodel, began his own investigation of his father.
Oh.
I don't know if it was because he had learned that his father had been such a crappy suspect.
Human. Yeah.
And he may have been well aware of his of his dad's tendencies. When he was going through his father's belongings, he discovered a photo album, and in the back was a photo of a woman that looked just like Elizabeth Short.
Oh.
He also had a handwriting expert compare samples of his father's handwriting to the writing on some of the notes sent to the press from the alleged killer, and the analysis found a strong possibility that his father's handwriting matched, but the results were not conclusive.
Oh.
And again, I already said that I just want to throw out the handwritten notes.
Right.
So I feel like if I'm saying that, then I have to throw this out too.
Yeah.
It's just on the list.
Right. Yeah.
Additionally, Hodel searched his father's archives at UCLA and he found a folder. I think it's after I talk for so long.
And words just start jumbling themselves. We're done. This is enough talking. We don't like people. Why are you still going?
Okay. Additionally, Hodel searched his father's archives at UCLA, finding a folder full of receipts for contracting work on his childhood home. And in that folder, there was a receipt dated a few days before the Black Dahlia murder.
Okay.
And it included a large bag of concrete, the same size and brand as a concrete bag found near Elizabeth Short's body. One to me is part of the most damning evidence in the case. Steve says he's also found details from dozens of other murders that could possibly be connected to his father, which implicate him not only as the Black Dahlia murderer, but he also thinks that maybe he could be the Zodiac. So today, Steve Hodel has published a book about his father's connections to the Black Dahlia murder and continues to investigate evidence that he could be connected to.
So did they get rid of the evidence that they had on, the rape kit and stuff that they did on her and stuff? Is that evidence gone? Could they not somehow match his DNA to?
I don't think that there was anything there.
Oh, okay.
I do know that they did at some point more recently do a DNA test and it didn't match up with anything. But I don't know that they had actual DNA, right? Hodel's research has garnered some attention from law enforcement. And in 2004, Stephen R. Kay, who is the head deputy for L.A. County's district attorney office, said if George Hodel was alive, he would have enough to indict him for
right.
Elizabeth yeah. Short's murder.
Yeah.
And I would be like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Wow. That's a lot of evidence against him.
Yeah. And then I wonder, too, if his dad could be connected to all those other murders. Not all of them.
Yeah.
But some of them.
A lot of them.
Because I don't feel like all of those are connected. But
no.
Yeah. Some of them have a whole lot of similarities.
Yeah.
And you just wonder. I just think he did it. The FBI has flat out said that as much time has passed, they'll probably never solve this.
Yeah.
But because of the connections that George Hodel has to the case, they say that's basically why it's still considered an open case.
Wow. They have so much to go from
there. And maybe at some point they'll be able to
that's
definitively
so
say. But so far, nothing they have has Oof. Shown anything.
So those knife killings, were they a long time after her killing? I can't remember.
All of those happened between 1943 and 1949.
Because I was going to say, like, what if he was starting to get a little older and couldn't, like, strangle people? Or, like, what if he had some sort of, like, issue at the time to where he couldn't, like, hold people down? So he just went, he resorted to knives.
So it looks like in 1947 is the last couple of women who were, like, murdered, sexually assaulted, strangled, left out in the open. Because the next few that happened later, we have the woman who was strangled by silk stocking after serving her husband with the divorce papers. And then we have the young girl who was stabbed and the real estate agent who was stabbed. And then the cosmetologist who was garroted and found in the back of her husband's car.
Right.
Those last few in particular to me just don't seem to match up with the others.
Yeah.
They were found like the one girl stabbed with her friends.
With her friend,
this woman was found in a car. And the other woman, I think, was also, she wasn't left out in the open, I don't think. No, she was left
in
a
house
vacant
that,
house.
Yeah, she was showing,
so the way the others were like, this one's left on a golf course and this one's left in a field. And,
a specific place,
That's just interesting to me.
Yeah.
So again, it's just my opinion, but I don't feel like the later ones are connected to the earlier ones mentioned. But they're all just women who were alone when they were abducted, aside from the 15-year-old.
Right.
And then murdered.
Yeah.
So they get thrown into the lone woman murders.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being a homicide detective and
finding out your dad may have had something to do with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then not just that, but that you think he might be actually a serial killer.
Yeah.
My dad, you know?
Yeah. Who?
Yeah.
And like you're doing all the casework.
Yeah. Like, on your own father.
Yeah.
Oh, it's wild.
So crazy.
Okay.
Wow.
That's that.
Thanks for covering that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
We'll have another episode for the Patreon since you guys did not pick this one.
Yeah.
To hear.
My gosh.
That's okay. I'm glad. I'm glad we covered it on the regular feed.
Yeah.
Even though it's one of those that gets talked about a lot, like I said, I just hadn't read about it in a while.
Right.
And it was good to kind of have a refresher.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all so much for listening.
Yeah.
We love you.
So much.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.